This week on the Commander Clash podcast, we're going to be ranking dual lands. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Commander Clash podcast, where the Commander Clash crew talks all things Commander. And this week, we're ranking some dual lands. We did this once a few years ago, but our opinions have changed. We've gotten a lot of new land cycles since then. And joining me to break down maybe the most important cards in Commander that no one actually considers and thinks that much about is Phil and Krim. What's going on, guys? How's it going today?
Hey, yo.
Lands, baby. The fun part, the one that no one...
most expensive and least fun part to update about a deck.
No one wants to talk about it. It's always the worst spill the cash for. Yeah, like not even the utility ones, just straight up. Lands.
Although,
but the most important part,
there's actually some utility here.
Yeah, I mean, there are some utility in dual lands now. Magic just keeps getting better and better lands. So we have almost 30 dual land cycles that we're going to group together and go through today. And hopefully by the time we're done, we'll have a pretty good ranking. So if you're trying to build a commander deck, you'll know basically what are the best lands you can put in it and what lands are pretty bad and you should only play if you're really desperate or on a budget. But before we get to that, we got some sponsors. Today's show is brought to you by Foil Armor. Do you have problems with your foils curling? Well, Foil Armor is the ultimate solution for flattening your foils. It's a two-way humidity pack that you simply put inside an airtight container with your cards, and Foil Armor will absorb and release moisture, making your cards completely flat. Put it back in your storage box to keep your cards flat forever, and head over to foilarmor.com and use the code MTGGoldfish to get 15% off. Our show is also brought to you by Card Conduit, the easiest way to sell your Magic cards. If you ever get tired of the hassles of buy listing, you can skip them with Card Conduit. You can use their curated service via sending as many cards as you want with a buy list value of a dollar or more and pay just a 5% service fee. Or if you want to do a bit of work, you can use their sorted service where you list and sort your cards in advance and pay just a 2% fee. Either way, you're going to get a detailed report with the results and a fast payment once your order is processed. And you can even get another 10% off by heading over to cardconduit.com/mtggoldfish. Card Conduit, it's the easiest way to sell your Magic card. So thank you to our sponsors for supporting the show. And now it's time for the comment of the week. So we recently discussed the top commander cards from Secrets of Strixhaven. And our top comment comes from Mr. Zaworix, who says, if there was a one mana, sack a creature, get a basic land tapped, people would play it. A road is better than path because you get death triggers and recursion from the graveyard. And I'm curious what you guys think about that, because I've been thinking about this comment. I almost think if there was, I was talking to Krim about this earlier on our other podcast, I almost think if there was just like a one green mana instant that was sack a creature, ramp a basic, we'd play that, right? Is this comment correct?
Yeah,
it kind of changed the way I think of a road a little bit. And maybe I've been looking at it backwards all these years, and maybe Tomer was right the whole time about pathing your own creatures, I don't want to admit it.
You're probably right.
I said it before, but it's more than that, right? Like when we talked about earlier, Seth, it's not just sack a creature. You're sacking a creature, discarding a card, right? You're doing all this to get
one.
You are going
to discard a card.
Like that is not what I want to do, right? In a multiplayer game, I don't even want to do that in single player. I definitely don't want to do that in a multiplayer game where there's more people.
No, multiplayer. No. Okay, I think this is shockingly revealing about how I thought about this card, because maybe it's not. Well, it's like a sacrificing or like putting the creature in your graveyard is actually so relevant. I admit that it would be better if it was green, but it is instant speed. I should probably play it.
This comment might have convinced me to play more paths in a row. So well done, Mr. Zoris. Yeah, good comment of the week. You might have actually had an influence on my commander deck building. So, so well done on that one. Leave your comments on this week's podcast, and maybe you'll influence our deck building for the next comment of the week. Anyway, let's talk some dual lands. So here's how we're going to do this today. So we put together a sheet with, I believe, 27 different dual land cycles. Basically, any dual land cycle that is even kind of maybe playable in Commander. We're not including five color lands. So like Starting Town, Cavern of Souls, we might do a separate podcast on those at some point. So we're not going to talk about those. But we went through and we ranked all 27 of these dual land cycles. And we ended up with a bunch of different groups, like a bunch of cards in D tier all the way up to S tier. So we're going to go through these groups and work our way through it, because that'll also let us talk about which card within each group is better. So, for example, we're going to start way at the bottom with the cards that we think are probably not very good. So the D-tier dual lands and the five land cycles that we have in D-tier are snow dual lands, which are lands that enter tapped. They make snow mana, if that's your thing. And they do have the land types, which is nice. We have scry lands. Enter tapped, you get to scry one when they enter. We have snarls, which enter tapped, unless you reveal a land of the proper type. So if it's the Azorius snarl, you can reveal a plains or an island and they come into play untapped. We have gain lands, enter tapped and gain one life. And then gates, enter tapped, except they work with Maze's End, if that's your jam. So these are our D tier lands. I'm curious, do you guys play any of these lands under any circumstances? This is our lowest rated group. These are the lands we don't usually play. What are the uses of these lands, Phil and Krim? Are there any?
I would play gain lands in life gain decks. Like if in Helia, I recently put in the angel thing that gains life when an angel enters and when it enters. Right. And it plays very well. Like if you play a deck that is centered around life gain trigger, it is worth a card sometimes if the board is developed enough. So I got them at C.
I actually think that's a good point with the new Witherbloom cards too, because the infuse mechanic wants you to gain life. So I think that's another place I'd consider the gain lands. Like if I want to turn on the new Wrath or whatever and turn it into a 3-mana hard Wrath, then I think the gain lands go up in value a little bit. What about you, Krim? I know, Krim, I see you play a lot of duels because you're a big dual land believer. You play some of the tap duels that I don't usually play. Do you play many of these cards we have in D tier?
I play a lot of duels.
Yes,
and
you do.
It's usually because I have the greediest color pips in most of my spells. And I don't play any of these anymore. Scry lands have gone into the bin. I don't even think about them anymore. The only reason you'll ever catch me with a scry land is because I couldn't find a normal land and it's the closest thing near me because I just have piles of just scry lands, right? But if not that, I used to play snow duels because I liked the typing on it and it was something I could fetch. But as more lands have come out, they've just given me more typings. They've completed more cycles. I have now just thrown these out as well. Like the new Turbulent lands just gave me another land with typing. Yep. So like I have no need for snow duels anymore. I have no need. I never played Snarls except for when they were in Standard, and that was begrudgingly. And then there was, you know, the Scry lands, same. Those were once Standard All-Stars. Throw those out now. I don't even think about them. And Gates only matters in one deck. But the one thing that shocks me, Phil, is that you play the gain lands. Even in life gain decks, I don't play them. I never need them in my life gain decks.
You want to trigger Helia sometimes. You get to gain that one life.
But the cost of a tapped resource for one life is, it's not like.
To be fair,
I
play
so
the untapped one. I don't play a dual color life gain deck. But I think even with Infuse, it is probably, well, I have them at C, okay? It's not a shock land.
That's a really high rating. Because like even, let's say if I'm on 3 and I want to go with Withering Curse or whatever, right? I play tapped gain land. Sure, I triggered Infuse, but I can't cast the spell I want.
Splunking.
And so it really becomes Splunky would change that, yes. But then either way, both are now turn 4 spells, right?
Yeah.
So
that's kind of true, yeah.
The gain lands are essentially adding another turn to my spell, turning my Withering Curse into a 4-mana spell.
I would say the two out of this group, the two that I think have legit purposes are the gates, specifically in like Maze's End or Nine Fingers. Sure. Like there are a couple of commanders that specifically care about gates. And snow duels are kind of the same way. I think there's like a handful of commanders like Jorn, if you remember from Kaldheim, untaps all your snow permanents when it attacks. So if you're happen to be playing a commander that specifically cares about that thing, then they're actually very good in your deck, but they are like such niche commanders that you don't see very often that I think they still deserve to be in D tier. My one other question about the D tier lands, what about budget? Like if you guys build a budget deck, do these make your decks? I know Tomer, he wasn't here today, but we had him rank all the cards, so he was part of the ranking. And for Snarls, he put S and then in parentheses B,
that's
which
bait.
I don't know if he's that's mean, bait. If that's bait, if that's budget, maybe, because I know Tomer does proudly play them in his budget decks. Do you guys play these lands in budget decks? Like Snarls?
Yeah. Like we did the $100 episode, right? Or like, or maybe that's on its way out or something like that. But yeah, either way, I do not. I play like the snarls in there because they're like 2 cents, right? Like, right. Like they're as cheap as a bulk bin basic, right? Along with like snow duels, scry lands. These are all solid in budget, like budget decks, just because of the dual color need. And when you have a bunch of like, you're pip hungry, I would definitely be jamming as many of these like budget duels as possible.
I still play one of the snarls because I like the Venice version from Doctor Who, which is like extended and looks cool, but yeah, it's on the way out.
Yeah,
and it's because of budget, honestly. It's still super cheap. There are also some back in the day all-stars here. The Tainted Cycle, I haven't seen them in a while, but they were like budget all-stars as well, unless you want the original.
I missed those ones. Yeah, Tainted Cycle is also in the D tier. Those ones just got power crept, I think. I remember when Commander was first big, those cards saw actually a lot of play. They're the ones where you have to control a swamp, right? And as long as you have a swamp, then they turn into a dual land. So they were kind of weird because they were from Torment, where everything was like black focus, but they were effective in their decks. But I feel like, similar to Scrylands for me, like when I first started playing Commander, Scrylands were staples. I was like happy to put those in every deck. And now I don't happily put them in any deck. Like a budget deck, it's fine. I still think they're okay, but they're like tapped all the time. So I think a lot has changed with dual lands because Wizards just print so many land cycles now. The cards that were good 5 or 10 years ago, I just don't really play at all anymore.
They've truly phased out all of these. So
they really have.
I mean, especially in recent times, and that's kind of why we did this podcast, because banner bases have gotten way better, both on utility lands, which will probably come up soon in a podcast as well, and then, I mean, especially fetching with, I mean, we're going to come to the S tier and A tier.
We're working our way towards the top of the list. Let's move on to the C tier. So C tier is actually our biggest tier. We have the most land cycles in here. And C tier is like not great, but maybe in a deck. So we probably play them in some situations. And included in this tier, we have the check lands or buddy lands. This is like Glacial Fortress lands that come into play untapped if you control two land types. So essentially, Glacial Fortress makes blue and white. If you have an island or a plains, it comes into play untapped. Otherwise, it comes into play tapped. The Battle for Zendikar lands come into play untapped as long as you have two basics. Cycle lands have the land types, but they come into play tapped all the time and cycle for two mana. Horizon lands, untapped, you got to take a damage to tap them for mana, but you can sack them to draw a card. Bridges are artifact lands, but they're also indestructible, but they always come into play tapped. Pathways, kind of two basic lands stapled together in a trench coat. You got one on each side. Fast lands come into play tapped if they're one of your first two lands. Tri lands, always tap the three colors. And then creature lands, you get the upside of turning into a creature for some amount of mana depending on the land, but they always come into play tapped. So this group, I feel like we are pretty consistent on. I was looking through all of our rankings. What sticks out in this group? Is there anything that for you personally, Krimmer Phil, you ranked higher than the group average on this one?
Yes. Yes, yes. Clearly, yes. I didn't know y'all hated creature lands so much. Like, is it because of my affinity towards these as, like, you know, finishers in, like, 1v1?
Oh my God.
Or, like, I feel like creature lands still have a place, right? And especially the most recent Ixalan set. They power crept some of them, right? Like, yeah, Celestial Colonnade, I still play, and I understand that's more of a me card than a good card. But, like, the blue-white, the Restless Anchorage, Restless Reef, Restless Cycle Entirely, I thought those were all really good. Maybe not the blue-red one, but, like, all of them were really good for what a creature land is. And I think creature lands are just something that you need in a world where there's, like, three players, there's sweepers, it's nice to always have a clock, even when you're, like, you know, out of cards, there's always something to do.
I'm curious, yeah. Grim, how often do you fire them up? Because what I run into with creature lands, and then I'll get to you, Phil. What I run into with creature lands is whenever I think of putting them in my deck, I'm like, am I really going to, in my commander game, where I want to be drawing cards or setting up an engine or doing something explosive, do I really want to like spend 3-4 mana to chip in for 2 or 3 damage with this creature land? Is that even worth it? Like, Do you find that you use them often, or are they more of like a backup break glass in case of, you know, emergency type thing where you're like, you like having them around for the situation when it comes up?
If we're talking first gen, like a lot of the earlier waves of creature lands, I think like Creeping Tar Pit and like the red green one again, I like those are the ones that I find myself still playing, and just they still have a lot of utility, right? Having an unblockable creature still really good in a lot of decks. Like, hey, I just need a connect trigger. I can then draw off of, like, I don't know, Coastal Piracy. The new cycle, the one from Ixalan, those ones I think are generically solid because they all do something. Like the red-black one, it gives a rummage. You have a map token. You know, you get to pump all your creatures with the llama from the green-white one. Outside of the red-blue one, and the red-white one gives out counters. I'm here for that. Those cards are still good to me. I would still play them.
Do you play the creature lands, Phil?
I play in very choice creature lands. So I checked. I do play Restless Bivouac in General Ferrer's Rockerick because it's two colors. Like, I have like multicolor red and white creature synergies. I do play Mutavault to abuse Book of Exalted Deeds sometimes because it's an angel.
Yep.
And I have to give a shout out to the Restless Cycle because since Earthbend, if the attack trigger is on the land, not the creature it turns into. So if you animate them and attack with them, that's kind of cool. Yeah. I don't do it in any of my decks, but
that is neat.
There is a use case for. I mean, Mutavault is definitely the one I play the most in like tribal decks, and most of the time just to get the indestructible me land.
Maybe I should experiment with them more. Like, I do like the fact that you have value in your mana base, but I kind of feel like there's so many utility lands now. Do I need the like creature value out of it? But Phil, I got to ask you, I'm looking through our rankings here. There was one cycle that you were way higher on than everyone else, which was Pathways. You seem to be the biggest Pathway believer in the group. Tell us about Pathways.
I don't know what's wrong with them. They're just better than basics, right? As long as you play enough basics, just as many basics as you play Solemns, the Richards die. And afterwards, they're just whatever you need. I play them in three-color decks.
Do you play them, Krim? I've always been very low on the Pathways. Only making one color on the battlefield annoys me. Like, I know that they're better than a basic, but you got to make the choice, right? And you make the choice on the turn you play it, and then later, maybe I want the other color of mana for some reason. And a dual land would give it to me, but a pathway doesn't. So that's what I get stuck on with Pathways. But Krim,
I mean, in two color, you got it, right? And what's the...
I think it's fine. Yeah, in two color, I think it's fine. I would not play them anything above two color, personally.
Correct. I only play them in my two color decks. Once I get to three color and beyond, that's when I can't play them. I liked them in the beginning in Commander. But then, again, more land cycles came out, and so just within that time, since Pathways have come out, it's already cycled out for me. this is definitely a 1v1 mana base card for me more than it is a 100 card. So I don't like Pathways anymore, but I used to, and I could see it in a two-color deck even to this day, but outside of that, no.
So we're talking about how these are lands that are in the C tier, which means that we could have uses for them. So let's go through this list real quick, and I'm curious, where do you play these cards? So check lands, is there any specific deck that you play check lands in, or is that just like a budget, like I'm on a budget and it's fine
green
type
decks.
Of thing?
I fetch so many forests with wood elves and stuff. I do have specific mana base setups for forest based decks, and check lands are way better if you do wood elves and three visits. So there's so much forest searching.
I feel like check lands are really not bad, right? They're like, they only come into, in theory, with a well-built deck, they really only come into play tapped on turn one. The biggest downside is they don't have the land types, and that's like kind of a mark against them. As we keep getting more and more cycles with land types, then the check lands just keep slowly dropping more and more in my ranking. When 10 years ago, I would have played these in pretty much all my decks.
Now I play them very rarely.
Yeah.
Yeah, like exactly, like Sulphur Falls, you know, Drowned Catacombs, these are all cards that I played a lot of. Nowadays, they're just a budget option, or if like I'm quickly throwing a deck together and it's just whatever mana base I can scrounge up near me, right? That's the only time I'm playing the check lands nowadays. Not a big fan of these anymore. Because the land types really matter to me.
Yeah, the land types are a big deal, and it continues to get to be more and more of a big deal as Wizards prints more things that care about the land types and only get like a forest or a plains or whatever. So I feel like they keep going down in value there. What about Battle for Zendikar lands? You need 2+ basics to have them come into play untapped. I hate these lands. I do not play
these
enough
lands
basics.
Are awesome.
I hate them. Oh, I hate them.
Okay, and like Phil is right in this situation here. Whenever I play these, I'm usually playing them in a green like forest based deck because you can very quickly get basics with Cultivate, Steve, all that stuff, right? So these more often than not in like a I even played in my 3-color decks that as long as they're green, right? Okay. So outside of a green based deck though. Sometimes, I mean, I still play them. I like the art on them, so I just play them.
What do you think?
And they have land types.
Check. I think I play them in Omnath as well. If they did, I mean, they probably go out here for those. Wait, how are the new lands? Turbulent lands.
Turbulent.
If I get my hands on them, they're gonna go out, obviously. But I should still play one of them. Something that's a forest, just in case. Yeah, Cinderglade. Hate it, but one second.
Hate it. Hey.
It's out here.
You don't like Prairie Stream, Sunken Hollow, the non-green ones?
In 2-color, if you're a basic believer, I think they're probably fine. Especially,
yeah, unsurprisingly.
Okay, 2-color fetch land. 2-color fetch land decks. You need to have the fetch land or the synergies too. With a bunch of basics, then they're fine. It does seem like a land cycle that Tomer would play more because he plays so many more basics than me. We do have an interesting one. I'm curious about this one. Horizon lands. So these are the lands that they're kind of painful, but they come into play tap. They make 2 colors. You got to take one if you tap them for mana, but then you pay one, sack them to draw a card. I've always wondered why I don't play these more. Like, is it just that sacking a land sucks in Commander? You don't want to go down a resource? Like, it seems like the option in the late game to sack it to draw a card could have value. What about if you're a Land Recursion deck, a Lord Windgrace deck? Then do these cards become bangers if you can keep getting them back from the graveyard? What do you guys do with Horizon lands?
I mean, yeah, if I'm a Lord Windgrace deck or some kind of landfall deck, this is great, right? You can just keep drawing, getting this back, doing more stuff, sifting, you know, filtering through my deck. But other than that, I don't really... Why would I play this when I could play, like, City of Brass and just make every color, right?
Yeah.
Or like a reflecting pool, a command tower, any of the rainbow lands, right? Those are just always going to be better. And they don't cost me a life to do it every time. And if you look at some of the other lands that may come up on our list later, they don't hurt you. And they can tap for just a generic mana.
I threw these in some of my decks because I opened a few of them during whatever Modern Horizons, whatever they released them in. So I threw them in some of my decks for a while. And I just found out that I didn't sack them hardly at all. Like, I just treated them like a normal land and took damage off them because I was always thinking, well, I might need that land later. So it was like desperation mode where I'm like about to die and I'm like, oh, I better sack the land. So I just didn't use them enough to make it worth taking the damage is what my experience was with them was. But what about you, Phil? Do you use them at all?
Yeah, I just checked. It's not even in my Necrobloom deck anymore. And in this one, you can dredge it back up, you can trigger dredge, you can put it into a graveyard, but I think I never activated it. And now I'm looking for, because I got the, I opened the Lord of the Rings version with its like back's end, and it should be in a deck here, but I don't know where it is. Maybe it's not in any of my decks anymore, which means
they need the
missing
future sight frame, and then they'll be appealing.
Did the flood get it, Phil? Did the great basement flood get
no,
the,
no, no,
no, okay,
no.
That's good.
No mentioning of the great fraud.
I will say, out of the C-tier lands, the ones that I get the most use out of are actually the bridge artifact lands. So these are the lands that enter tap, they're artifacts, they make 2 colors of mana, and they're indestructible. And these are not cards that I play in many decks, but I've come to believe in Tomer's janky red ramp plan of like hitting your own indestructible lands with Cleansing Wildfire if you're red to Rampant Growth, and we have a few of those effects now. So in that context, I actually really like them. I want to ask you guys about artifact decks. Like, you're playing an artifact deck. The name is I'm an artifact deck. Do you play the artifact lands because they're synergistic or whatever, or are they not worth it because they get farewelled or they get hated on by the same stuff that hates on the rest of your deck? How do you treat the bridges?
That's my concern. I don't play them. I am the polar opposite. I I think that the last thing I need is my resources to be picked off by some kind of exile effect, right? Like, I'm already losing my board and everything exiles, and I don't even want to put myself at risk.
It's a game changer now.
Maybe Farewell's a game changer, but that doesn't change artifact exiling, right? Yeah. So I would rather not try. And as someone who will draw, like, who often draws the ire of the table just for the cards I play normally, I know that if anybody was like, oh, I don't have a second target to exile off the spell, so I'll just randomly pick off Krim's land. I think I am very much so a person that would get targeted by that.
I mean,
so,
you gotta think of the value.
I play them in Urza and Mishra, and especially in, like, Urza has a bunch of, I mean, it's a construct deck, so I need all the power I can get. And in Mishra, I play them because cards like Smelting Vet and Reality Heist find them. So it actually makes the deck very consistent when it comes to finding lands. Yeah, they're tapped. They just do the thing. It's kind of shocking that Toma doesn't have them higher because he's preaching the unorthodox Ram strategy with them. It, not just with the blow up your indestructible artifact, but also with the tutor.
Oh, yeah. The War of Invention.
Yeah.
War of Invention
it is
stuff,
sweet.
Yeah.
I gotta say, it is sweet. I would have expected him to rank them at B, but I think he did C, right?
I think he did C. Yeah, that kind of surprised me. Kind of surprised me as well. One last land cycle.
Wait, Krim has them at B.
Oh,
didn't you just say? Wait, what?
Oh, I mean, like, yeah, like the artifact lands. I mean, I wouldn't play. I probably wrote that.
Oh,
wrong.
You did play them, but yeah, I mean, they have their place in there.
They have their place in the. I'm using our B like
oh,
structure
B as
specific
in
decks
B.
Basically.
Yeah, you really got to lock in on that like and want that. I wouldn't just generically play that in any of my artifact decks.
The last C tier group I wanted to ask you about is fast lands. So fast lands, very good 1v1 lands, right? In constructed, I never play these. I view them as completely unplayable. But we were talking a little bit before the cast, Phil, and you're like, there might be some situations where they could actually be worth it. So what situations would you actually consider a fast land in your deck?
I mean, I play it in Lornus because my commander costs less than three. Or three or less. Because I'm all about my commander and I would need to cast this. Everything else, whatever. It's probably going to get blown up and stuff. Just make sure you cast your commander on time and see if you can get away with it. So I do play Botanical Sanctum in Lornus, and the other decks where I play them, it's just budget and collection reasons. Like, I wouldn't suggest it in any other deck. Maybe General Ferrous Rockrick, which is also three mana, so whatever. Yep. It's also the same, and I do play it. Yeah, Inspiring Vantage.
That actually kind of makes sense to me, because it's also funny, because I think I see them occasionally in, like, higher power decks, too, especially for budget, and you can't play, like, the Abu duels and so forth, then sometimes you see the fast lands there because if the game's going shorter, then you have more value out of those lands because they're less likely to matter that they come into play tap later in the game. So out of these C tier lands, before I move into the B, gun to the head, you got to win a game of Magic to stay alive, but you can only pick lands from this tier. What are you building your deck around? Like, what is the best of the C tier lands in your opinion?
Creature lands.
Literally lands for Krim.
Did you say
probably
win the game?
Lands.
You mean the things with the bodies?
They literally win. You got to win the game. They can actually win you the game. What about you, Phil? What's your number one C tier land?
I'd pick check lands, probably.
I think
they just right.
I think that's where I am at as well. Like, and the other thing I'd say about C tier is I feel like this is kind of a budget tier for me, where even though I don't play check lands or the Battle for Zendikar lands very much, dedicated budget week on Commander Clash, these cards are probably in my deck because they're really, really cheap. And I think for how cheap they are, they're definitely a step up from the gain lands or the gates that just always enter tapped, at least a decent percentage of the time, especially in a budget deck with a bunch of basics. You can actually get them to come into play untapped. So I think that's part of the power of the C tier, is they are okay as budget lands.
Also in two color, you don't have too many choices. I mean, we get new lands every time, but you need at least 36 of them. So
at least
I play pretty much all of them. The more fetch lands you have, but
the other thing,
I have 10 lands. They don't all have fetch lands.
I mean, that's the thing, right? So much of this also depends on how many fetch lands you're playing. Because if you have an unlimited budget, even in a two color deck, you can play what, 7 fetches? 3 color, you can play 9. 4 plus, you can play 10. So, like, if you're maxing out your fetch lands, your mana base is going to look a lot different if you have seven fetches in your two-color deck compared to if you have zero fetches or one fetch in your two-color deck. At least that's been my experience, that it's way, way different depending on if you're building around fetches or not. Anyway, let's move on to the B tier. So these are lands that we all agree are good, at least in specific decks. So in the B tier, we have five cycles or maybe one half cycle of lands. First off, the pain lands. So enter untapped, make it colorless, or make one of two colors of mana, but you got to take a damage. We have filter lands, enter untapped, make it colorless, or you can pay one and tap them to make some combination other colors. So if it's the Dimir one, you can make blue, blue, black, black, or blue, black with them. We have this Spider-Man tri-lands, not a full cycle, only two of them. But Oscorp Industries is a tap Grixis land, but you can mayhem it into play from your graveyard if you discarded it for the turn. But if it comes into play from the graveyard, you take two. And then Urban Retreat, a Bant tri-land that you can sneak into play by paying two and returning a tap creature you control to your hand only as a sorcery. Then we have Verges, which make both colors. They're kind of like the upgraded check lands, honestly. They're check lands that work right away for one color. And once you get the other land type, then you get both colors. And then slow lands, kind of like the Battle for Zendikar lands, but they don't have the land types. And all it cares about is you having at least two lands. So it doesn't matter if they're basics or not. So tell me about these B tier lands, Phil and Krim. What are you guys playing out of this group?
I still play a lot of these, if not all of these. Yeah.
Me ask you about filters, because filters is the one that jumps out to me. I have filters as D tier. I never play filter
wild.
Lands. No. I just do not put them in my deck. Do you guys play them pretty regularly? Am I missing out?
Punished once.
Damping Sphere, and I never played them again.
Honestly, like the fact that they filter and make any color mana I need, again, I love that, right? Like being able to leave up a charm or whatever, blue-black, whatever I need it to be. I just really like that.
I figured Krim would love these because you play the like super harsh mana cost where you want like, oh, my triple black spell and my triple blue four drop. And like they're very good in that context, right? Like I remember playing them in Modern and Cryptic Command decks because it's a great way you can turn like off-color mana into double blue mana, which is actually very powerful in that context. I haven't really found the need to play them in Commander. Where do you play them, Phil? You just play them like a normal dual land?
So far, I didn't get punished too much. The way you get punished with them is either, I mean, they tap for colorless, so it casts a Soul Ring, but if you have another colorless land and you're still locked out of colors, it sucks. They're untapped, though, so it is almost a freebie. I just didn't get punished.
If you're keeping an all colorless land hand, you know, you probably deserve to be kind punished, of right? Like,
I mean, the pain lands are kind of like that too, right? Where they've kind of grown on me. There were lands that I didn't used to play as much, but I play more now because I finally realized like they come into play untapped, which is what you want. That's one of the biggest things I think Tomer mentioned. What's his little write up here? For me personally, here's what I want out of a dual land, says Tomer. I want it to be number one untapped, number two have the land types, number three ideally make mana on turn one or turn two. If it's all three of them, it's an S tier. If it's less than three, it depends on how much utility I think they have. And I think that's mostly what I look for in lands too. Like untapped and land types are really, really powerful. And that's something that fast lands do really well, right? They're untapped. They don't have the land types. So they're not going to be S tier, A tier. But then the fact that you have to take a damage to make colored mana with them actually doesn't matter as much as it looks. Unlike a City of Brass tile effect, where you just always take the damage, what I found with pain lands is by the time you get to turn 4, 5, 6, you can usually just tap them for colorless and not take any damage. So it's a way you can like cast your early ramp or whatever you need and take a little damage on turn 1, turn 2. And then as the game goes along, they kind of stop being pain lands because I just use them for colorless mana.
Yeah. Also, just useful for one card for me, but I play the card a lot. You can kick a Sowing Microspawn with it because you need colorless mana.
You gotta make sure you
get this.
Pain lands are good because of mentioned. So yeah, I really like them. And filter lands as well. Filter lands specifically, I play over the pain land slot because I like the double pips. I think anything that gives me the versatility of fixing my colors and pips, I really like. Pain lands are good. I still play them here and there as well. I mean, I play all of these. Every one of these lands are in my deck.
We've reached that level, I think, where at least in two-color decks, you're probably going to play a decent amount of these. Except our next cycle, the Spider-Man Tri-Lands. I'm curious of your guys' experience with these, because to me, they look fine if you're in their colors. Like, if I'm Grixis, Oscorp's Industries seems fine. If you're Bant, I guess the Urban Retreat seems fine. But I never play these cards. What is good in specific decks in this case? Like, when we say Oscorp Industries is good in specific decks, does that mean I have to be a Grixis Mayhem deck where I'm, like, discarding it for value? Or would you just play this in any Grixis deck? Same with Urban Retreat. Do I have to be some sort of, like, ninjutsu deck or whatever to be able to play it? Or do I just play in any Bant deck? Give me an evaluation of those tri-lands.
I think Oscorp is a more specific deck because you want Mayhem, you want to discard, rummage, all of that stuff. Like, my Kefka deck plays it.
Okay.
Like, you know, obviously, Connive is the purpose of this card. So if you do anything that's going to do a lot of discarding, it's nice to throw away a land, but not have to deal with the, you know, the drawback of throwing away a land and being stuck, right? So this guarantees that you still get a land to ditch and then get to play it. So I really like that, but it has to be in that deck. Whereas I think Urban Retreat, in Bant specifically, there are so many cards that you don't mind getting the ETB back on, right? Like, if you return like a Lorant or something like that, right? After drawing both players, then you get to put it back into play. And you get a land on top of that. I don't know. I really like Urban Retreat.
Same. It's the only card from the set I got. And I do play it in my one Bant deck. And it just feels so good. If you return like a Wood Elves and then the land and the Wood Elves also round. And then it's so satisfying if you pull it off. And if not, it's a tapped Tri-Lands. We kind of skip them here. We have them at C. I have them at D now. I just never play them. But this is fine. The upside is good enough. I have never played the Grixis one because I don't have a discard deck.
I just don't play enough Grixis discard decks to really play. I can see how the Mayhem one could be my very decks. Good. Yeah.
But
I'm sure they are, Krim. I'm sure they are. I mean, I think that this is where I want the Tri-Lands to go. Like, we kind of know that the Tri-Lands that just don't have any upsides are not really good enough anymore. But these with an extra upside, I think, are very interesting. So I hope we get the rest of the cycle eventually, if it is a cycle. And we see this for more, like, three color pairings moving forward. What about Verges or Soul Lands? Our last two lands in the B tier.
I forgot. Who is not high on Verges? Because I love Verges. I think they are exactly like you'd mentioned. If you like check lands, these cards are better. They're better.
They are better. I have them at C. You have them at A. I have them at C. I don't play Verges. I don't think they're bad. It's just how I build my mana bases. So my experience with mana bases is I don't need Verges. And this is going to get even worse once we get to A tier, because some of the lands y'all think are staples, I just kind of stopped playing. But I haven't found them necessary. I have found that when I build a two-color deck, I play like 7 fetch lands. I play maybe 6 or 8 dual lands. And then I fill the rest with utility lands and bounce lands and so forth. I just haven't found the need to really play Verges, so I think they're fine. I just don't really put them in my decks. Do you guys just put them in every deck?
Yeah. I mean, I especially
in two-colors.
Every two-color deck, yeah.
I do have a gripe with them, though. Ooh. And I don't know. So by themselves, Willow Rush Verge and Thornspire Verge, so Gruul and Simic one, doesn't tap for green, so it doesn't play the green one drop. And this kind of sucks. Do they print 10 more Verges? Probably not. So
not eventually,
so kind
maybe.
Of weirdly unfinished cycle.
That was.
I would love them to tap for green instead as a default, but I still play them. They're just very good in two color.
That was also my note on them, is like what color they make first or naturally is actually kind of important. And I think it's especially, you had the perfect example in a green deck. The ones that don't make green mana turn one actually go way down in value. Do you still just play them, though, Krim or Phil? Like, you still jam them even knowing that you're not going to play your elf on turn one with them or whatever?
Yeah.
All right. Anyway, best B-tier land cycle. What is your number one out of this group? What do you play the most?
I love my Verges. I love all these other lands, but the one is Slow Lands. I really like Slow Lands. We're talking like Shipwreck Marsh, you know, Shattered Sanctum, all of that. These are cards that as soon as they came out, I just put them in all my commander decks. They are untapped every time on turn 3.
Do you feel like they've been power crept yet? Like, have we got to the point where there's so many lands that we don't need them as much anymore? Because I feel like, I know it's only been like 3 years or something, but I feel like I played them a ton when it first started. And now they're sitting in my commander box most of the time. And I just feel like, I don't really need another dual land. So even though they're good, like,
they're staples to me. And I haven't even, they haven't even gotten close to being removed yet. They're also at a very good price point. Where I feel
that is
really good about including them, right? Like, they are usually untapped, super solid in price. Now, especially with Strixhaven reprinting some of them, I love these lands. So, yeah, maybe they're not untapped on the early turns, but that's fine. Because for every land after that, they will always be untapped.
And really, like, if you're playing Commander, how many decks will you have that you're going to keep a hand that does not have at least three lands in them? Like, a lot of times you can sequence your opening hand in a way that you're going to play this as your third land anyway, right? And then it's just gravy for the rest of the game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely the most played B tier lands.
Yeah.
Probably up to par with Pain Lands, but I probably just play both in every two-color
deck. Every
two-color
deck.
Like, sometimes I think about one of them and not the other one.
What about like three plus color decks? Are you still playing landing pain land five color?
Still, I mean, five color is,
it depends.
Unique,
maybe.
Budget is out the window anyway in five color, so I don't know. It's going to be fetches and everything I can get my hands on that helps.
Yeah, when triomes are like $20-some, I think budget is no longer a thing that you're factoring in at five color. But if you wanted to and you wanted to play a five color deck with a budget, this is great for that too, right?
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah.
Heck, yeah, maybe even a budget five-color deck could play this.
Yeah, on a budget,
so
I think, for
now.
Sure. Yeah, pain lands are also very cheap. Like, mm-hmm. I think filter lands also are relatively cheap now, right? Like,
are all these except Verge pretty cheap? Some filter lands, I think two are left that haven't been reprinted yet.
Ah, okay.
You can go very pricey on the pain lands, though, and they look gorgeous.
Oh, the original ones, yeah. If you get the old, like, Apocalypse and Ice Age ones, they are super expensive now, yeah.
The foils, yeah.
All right, let's move into the A tier. So these are, getting to our staple level lands, just below our most played lands. These are lands that are good in a ton of different decks. We got four cycles here. We have the Battle Bond lands, which enter untapped basically just all the time in Commander. It's based on the number of opponents you have, right? So they just always enter untapped unless someone has died and not in the game anymore. Triomes have three land types, make three colors of mana. They cycle for three, but they come into play tapped. But being fetchable and making three colors is wild. Bounce lands, the Commander Clash classic, two colors of mana, but you have to bounce a land back to your hand when you play them. And they come into play tapped, but they tap for two mana, one of each of their colors. And then finally, our newest cycle, Turbulent lands. So these are the ones that we just got in Secrets of Strixhaven, Commander. They come into play tapped unless your combined opponents have at least eight lands between them, and then they come into play tapped for the rest of the game. I think Turbulent lands are just like upgraded slow lands, basically. If you think about how they work, the time that they come into play untapped should be roughly the same as slow lands as far as turn cycles.
Sure.
But they also have the land type so you can fetch them out. So I feel like they're essentially like slow lands with the land types are very close to that. But what do you guys think about these lands? Let's start with the Battle Bond lands. These were printed specifically for Commander when they first made them 10 years ago. People were hyped. They were like $20. They were in all the decks. I will admit, I don't play them as much anymore. I know I've said this about a few cycles. I don't even put them in my two-color decks much anymore.
Is it because of price?
I mean, they're very expensive. I don't think it's necessary if you're playing a bunch of fetch lands to play that many non-fetchable duels. I think you can play like seven fetch lands, maybe five or six fetchable duels, and then just stuff your deck with utility lands and be fine.
Wild. This tells me you aren't trying to cast Cryptic Command.
I am not trying to do the Crim. Yes. No, I'm not doing the Crim mana base.
Okay.
Because
no. I find myself still playing the hell out of these Battlebound lands, right? These Battlebound lands are just, I don't know, they're always untapped until you get down to like the final like 1v1 area, but like, super phenomenal lands, always untapped means the world to me. And like,
very good.
I can forgo them not having the land types because of that. They are both colors and they're always untapped unless you're in 1v1 mode.
You almost can't make a better dual land for Commander as far without the land types, as far as just how often it comes into play untapped. Like, you could print a dual land that was just always comes into play untapped and didn't have the land types, and that would essentially be the Battle Bond lands. Like, that's how often they come into play untapped in Commander. I think I can remember, like, one or two games in my entire Commander history where someone played a tapped Battle Bond land because someone, it was, like, late game and someone had already died.
Yeah.
But it almost never happens.
Yeah.
What do you think, Phil? You're in on the Battle Bond lands. What do you think about the Triomes, Phil?
They are great, obviously. I remember us always doing turn one fetch Triome. Nowadays it's turn one
surveil.
Fetch Surveil.
Surveil lands, Pat. Yeah.
But they're still essential, especially if you go more than three colors, even like in every three color deck, it just needs the Triome. You can cycle them, which doesn't happen never.
No,
we skipped over these cycle lands with card types for the other one, but since you kind of want to play the Triome anyway, sometimes I cycle them. Desperation mode. But yeah.
No, they have that cycle.
They're really good. They form the foundation of my five-color mana bases. Like, mm-hmm. I think that's where they're at their best is my five-color decks. I usually have, like, maybe up to five-ish Triomes. I don't play all 10 of them. You don't need them. But a lot of times it'll be, like, all the ones that make green, and then I can fetch them out with my green fetches. I can fetch them out with my wood elves or whatever. So they usually are very, very important there. Obviously, if you're less than three colors, they're not even legal to be played. So it is 3 to 5 color decks, but very strong there. Phil, I got to ask you about this one, because we all love these. Actually, this one's kind of funny, because I love them. Most of the Clash crew loves them. I think Krim has these lands rated the lowest out of the group. And Phil, you have them in the S tier, and that is Bounce Lands.
I can't believe. Yeah.
Bounce Lands. I got them at A. I got them at A. Phil, you got them at S. Krim's got them at B, which is still good, but not S tier. Why are these lands so good, Phil?
I mean, they are the most utility. Maybe fetch lands are more utility. Or up to par utility. So, okay. So first of all, you remember Richard explaining how a bounce land is kind of drawing you a land. It is a tapped land that bounces a land to your hand. So you kind of draw a land and make the land drop next turn. You can bounce an MDFC that you played earlier and then you have an Ondo inversion for later. You can activate catch-up ramp. You can copy the land with Vesuva or Thespian Stage to get another land that taps for 2 mana. You can play them with Explore to get more land drops, bounce them. There's infinite combos with them if you play the Kodama and something that creates
like
a trigger.
Specific deck, like a B-tier land.
Well,
right?
It's in, I play the infinite combo in 3 decks. And then you can also play them with Spelunking or Amulet, have them untapped and do the Amulet thing. They are just insane, and I built an entire deck around them. My Omnath deck is a Bounce Land combo deck. It's the easiest S. So much
bounce,
utility.
Let me ask you this then, Phil. 5-color deck. Are there Bounce Lands in it?
If it's 5-color ramp, yes.
Okay. See, that's
it's
why
like
I put
Wandering
it...
Wandering Minstrel, yeah.
That's why I put it in A tier. For me, Bounce Lands, 2-color deck, every time I'm going to have a Bounce Land. A lot of times, I'll even have some of the colorless ones to have more Bounce Lands in there. 3-color decks, I also like Bounce Lands. Once I get to 4 or 5 colors, though, then I typically don't play Bounce Lands unless I have a very specific purpose. Like, the Wandering Minstrel thing would be an example. I also love how they interact with MDFCs. That's one of the tricks we've seen a bunch of times is, like, play my Seagate Restoration as a land so I can make mana, and then late game pick it back up and draw a bunch of cards with it. Krim, you're the lowest on the Bounce Lands. You're still giving them a B, so you still say they're good, but how do you use the Bounce Lands? Are they mostly just 2-color decks? Do you play them in all your 2-color decks?
I do not play them in all my decks, and they are more so a specific kind of deck card for me. Like, this land is great, yes, for bouncing back your MDFCs, but more often than not, I have not been enlightened in the ways that Richard has enlightened all of us, right, on these bounce lands. They are an open sore spot, right? Like, you could just pretty much an exposed weak point here in that somebody can blow it up. And like in our specific group where Seth just plays strip mine all
time. Yeah, I always have a strip mine.
if you weren't such a nice guy, Seth, if it were me with the strip mine, you know.
Would you just always be getting the bounce lands?
I would not care. I would just on principle pick things off and actually pick them off. Because in the situations where you saw like strip mine do its work, people do play like demolition field and things like this, right? So getting something to just pick off my two land resource and totally set me back a turn, it is a real cost, and it is a cost that comes with a land that is tapped as well. I do like the getting back an MDFC. That's the only thing that really bumps it back up to a B. And if you're like one of those like double, like Phil had mentioned, if you have explorers and all of those growth spiral effects, being able to do this multiple times in a turn is super solid. But for the most part, that is the only deck where I feel like it thrives in. There's no one deck where I'm like, I do not feel like in my blue-black fairies deck, I'm like, hell yeah, bounce land. Cool.
I can see that. I can see that. I feel like a lot of times the upside of the card advantage is worth the risk. Because not everyone, if you're out in the wild, I guess it depends on your playgroup. I could see in the Clash playgroup I'd be risky because I always play strip mine. But if your playgroup isn't playing a lot of the strip mine effects, then I think it's kind of a free roll and it is card advantage. But it is true that once you get hit by a strip mine, it can potentially like lose you the game. And it is a huge tempo swing because it's kind of like getting two land strip mined, really, because you get to bounce a land back to your hand and then it makes two mana. So it's very, very brutal when it gets strip mined. But
you got
to
get that off.
The tap land is really brutal, right? Like I would not play the Boros one or any of these bounce lands in a deck that is trying to play low on the ground, right? Like my humans deck runs no bounce lands.
Ooh. Oh, Phil, let me ask you, Lannis. We were talking about fast lands in Lannis because you have this cheap commander. Do bounce lands get less valuable to you in a commander like Lannis, or are you just like, I'll just play in the late game and still get the value? What do I care?
I mean, as I mentioned, let me check. I am very sure because I do play Kodama of the East Tree.
Oh, right.
And
that's
I do
not
play
aggro, though,
Titus
right? Like, Lannis is
a
not
combo.
An aggro deck.
That yeah, is I guess true. That's it is a combo true. Deck, I guess yeah. It's not actually aggro.
I can check. I guess my most aggro deck is General Ferrous Rokurik. And there is a Boros Garrison in here.
You still got one?
Wild. I would not play a Boros Garrison in that, right?
Play?
Nope, not even catch-up ramping. Just
wow,
just
run
advantage.
Just draw that land. Well, our last A-tier land cycle is our newest one, the Turbulent Lands. So these come into play untapped as long as all of your opponents together have at least 8 lands on the battlefield, which typically means by turn 3, partway through turn 2, maybe even faster if people are ramping aggressively. So kind of like the slow lands, they have the land types, which is huge. I feel like there's a chance that these end up like the best lands in the A tier once we get to play with them. But like we're recording this right as the set's coming out. We haven't really got to play with them yet. Do you think there's any chance we're overrating, underrating these lands since we haven't got to play with them? What do you think about the Turbulent Lands?
Maybe underrating. I got them at A. I'm almost sure that they're going to be kind of Abu duels.
I think they might be S. I think there's a chance.
Would-haves for sure.
I agree with Phil. Fetches. I think we're definitely underrating them. I just don't see a world where these aren't good. Like, what would be the reason why these are bad?
Oh, they're definitely. Oh, they're definitely.
If people
good.
Play
My
enough
question
bounce lands.
Is,
like
are they
where
shock
they aren't
land
staple?
Good?
Sorry.
Like are they?
What you would play make them not a staple?
So my question is, do I play them in 5-color decks? That's my question. Like, do these make the cut? For me, that is the definition of S tier, is do I play them in all my 5-color decks? And my normal 5-color mana base is 10 fetch lands, 10 shock lands, 10 surveil lands, 5 triomes, and then, like, a few basics, 3 or 4 basics, maybe a utility land or two. Something like that. Maybe I trim back a little bit on the surveils to get in a strip mine or a couple more utility lands, but basically like that. So do these beat out shocks? Is there a world where these are better than shock lands?
That is the no.
Like you can't
question,
fetch them
man.
Untapped no. on turn 1 or turn 2, but for the rest of the game, you fetch them like Abu duels, right? You fetch them with no pain. They come into play untapped every single time. I guess you get a little bit of the battle bond problem maybe where if someone dies, I guess in the late game, there's probably enough lands, even with two players, that even if someone dies, they'll still go into play on tap. But do you think there's a chance they're shock land good or better than shock land good? Like, should I be replacing my shocks in my 5-color deck with these?
I know this is going to sound blasphemous, but I think Abu lands. I have no need for them. They are so much money that they're absolutely pointless to own, unless you just want to own a piece of history. So way, I would play Turbulent Lands over it. Because shocks sit at the top, right? They're going to just be the lands for me. And then somewhere in between shocks and Surveil is like really good because of surveilling, but I think these could sit somewhere right in between a shock and a surveil land.
The problem is that a tapped land is very, very brutal if it happens. And two damage in the early game is not brutal, kind of ever. So I think the floor is just worse. And then the ceiling
floor is worse. The ceiling is higher, I guess, since you take
two damage. Just isn't too bad. So I think shocks are going to be just a little better. I think you just play both. Probably not in five color.
I mean,
because you already play the.
You know what's funny?
You already play a lot of tap lands with tri-lands or like triomes. So you really need to make sure you get the untapped ones if you need them.
If we take into account that if I were to actually grade this, not on just like, okay, obviously Abu Dhuls are good. If I graded this, the Abu Dhuls at what I think they are, which is like a D because I don't need to play them. Not on like power level and functionality, just like how important are these duels? I think they aren't. They aren't important at all. That then knocks them down to an A, meaning the only real S's are going to be fetches, shock, surveil, and you could hypothetically move turbulent lands up there.
But let me ask you, Krim, couldn't I make that argument about any individual land cycle? Couldn't I just be like, well, technically, I don't really need shocks. Like, I could
you
just play the
shocks.
Next best. Like,
I think you need shocks. The reason why, and I think the only reason about Abu Dhuls, like, that really stand out amongst anything else is that they are, like, $700.
So if we're throwing the price in there,
throw out price, then yes, sure, Abu Dhuls are amazing, right? In that sense. As a game piece, they're great. But let's be realistic. They're not going to be free, and they'll never be like $2. So I think that the Turbulent Lands... outside of proxying, which you can. Turbulent Lands just feel really good. I feel like Turbulent Lands, we are underrating it. They should be sitting somewhere in between Shocks and Surveil.
I can say
they're not as
good as utility, though. You can surveil a big bomb into the graveyard, turn two, reanimate. So that's, they just enter untapped, and that is very, very good.
Untapped,
but
fetchable.
Fetchable utility is crazy, though. There's a reason why we always get the surveil land first.
True.
It's just too good. You keep a two lander, fetch, surveil, look for a land.
But
there's too much value in this.
But if we always get the surveil land first, doesn't that mean we could tap out a tapped Turbulent on turn one? Like, we wouldn't get the value, but it isn't going to throw our curve off too bad if we're getting tap lands anyway.
I'm sure, but just get the surveil.
I think my current ranking is, I think these have to be the best out of the A tiers that we have. Like, I think it's better than Battle Bond lands, better than Triomes in the sense that you can play them in two color decks, which you can't with Triomes. Bounce lands, I know we already talked about those, but I think overall I would play Turbulent lands more probably. Whether or not they actually beat out the S tier lands, I can see an argument that maybe they're like just behind shocks, between shocks and surveil. But anyway, let's talk S tier because we got to get these lands out here. So here are the four groups of lands, the four cycles that we have in S tier, the ultimate, the best. So number one, the Abu duels. So alpha, beta, unlimited duels. And these, as Krim already described very well, they are the best lands, right? They printed the best cycle of dual lands in the very first set of Magic 33 years ago. They enter untapped. They have both of the land types. So they are just as good as it gets. The problem is they are hundreds and hundreds of dollars. So we don't play them. We actually have them housebanned on Commander Clash. My question for you with these lands is, would you recommend people buying them? Because I wouldn't. I don't think I would. Like,
definitely.
Like, do you tell people to go get them for your Commander deck? I guess maybe if you're like a tournament CDH player and you care about every half a percentage point you can eke out because you're trying to win prizes, then maybe. But otherwise, I don't think there's any world where a casual Commander player should ever buy Abu Dhuls. Like, I think that money is better spent on something else, like in a whole deck of cards that doesn't have.
You can literally get a whole deck.
Yeah.
Anything lower than CDH, and I'm not talking bracket four, you have to actually be actively grinding out tournaments.
Like tournament scene,
Then sure. I get it, because you want to run a low land count. They need to be different land names and things like that just in case. But yeah, I do not recommend Abu Dhul's anywhere outside of that. Either they that are, or unless you want to own, again, a piece of like historic.
Right, if you want them for a collection sure, yeah. or something. Yeah.
But I think they are very, more, maybe not a percent, but you will notice over the course of a game, like there is the situation where you fetch out of duels. And this mm-hmm. gives you, like, especially in two color decks. Now we have some more with the Turbulent Lands, so I don't know if that's still the case, but I did already fetch out of duels and then basics. I don't run too many. And this is just an untapped duel. It does help. The Wood Elf enters, gets the tropical island, and then you cast
Does it $1,000 help?
Next turn, no, of course not. But then you have two mana more next turn, so that is, well, I mean, I guess one mana more.
They are very good. They are the best. They are the best dual lands as far as actual dual lands that stay on the battlefield. I don't think there's any debate about that. The only question is it actually worth the price tag? I think we all agree the answer is basically no.
Because so many reprints or, I mean, not reprints, like new cards that have just kind of, in a way, they're slightly worse, but I don't think the percentages that you would be sacrificing by playing something over a duel, like a Abu Dhul, not really noticeable in casual.
Honestly, that said, I would prefer if I have either a Surveil, like I have one Surveil or one Abu Dhul, I would like the one Surveil because I'm sure I'm going to fetch this up more often.
We played that pre-modern commander with Tomer a little while ago where we actually played the Abu Dhuls because we could only play the cards from the 90s. And I spent that whole episode fiending for Surveil and fetching out underground seas and be like, man, I wish this was a Sewers. I really want to be surveilling right now. So it is funny like how good the Surveil lands are. The other two groups we have here, Shocklands, which are literally Wizards' attempt to recreate the Abu Dhuls and get around the reserve list. They're the same exact thing, except to come into play untapped, you got to take 2 damage. So slightly okay. more painful, but very good. And then Surveil lands come into play tapped all the time, but you surveil one when they enter. Both of these also have the land types, which, if you noticed a theme, we all kind of really value the land types. And I think in Commander, even discounting fetch lands, even if you're a budget player who's like, I don't play with fetch lands, I think there's so many land type synergies that it's still very important to have the land types, right, Phil?
Yeah, I spent like Farseek, Nature's Law, 3 visits, Wood Elves. That's already enough to need four forests that are not basics.
Yeah, yeah, and that makes it worth it. There, the last group is fetch lands, and honestly, I think they're better than S tier. And actually, I think Tomer in his little note that he said, fetches for me are S++, best lands, period. Synergizes in any deck without even trying. Better than Abu Dhuls, but I hate shuffling. My reasoning's not exactly the same, but like, I play a lot of 5-color decks. The power of fetch lands is they're essentially dual lands that come into play untapped for any color that's in your deck. Because if you're playing dual lands with land types, you can play an Arid Mesa and tutor out a land that makes black and red, or one that makes blue and white. Like, you can just get any color that you need in any given situation. So I don't think anything compares to fetches. I think fetches are actually better than any other of the lands here, and almost to the point where I don't even know if they should be considered dual lands. They almost think of them as their own thing that like separates them from the rest of them. But for me, they're that impactful.
I mean, the same thing I listed with Bounce Land. It they kind of feel like a spell. They have 2 landfall triggers. You can copy the fetch trigger to ramp. You have a land in the graveyard to get Sun Titan Resurrection or Court of Ardenvale. I can list so many things. And fetch lands are like spells, kind of like
they
bounce
are
lands, but even better.
Well,
they're just
outside
the perfect
of the,
land
the,
by far.
Getting them, and
I know
they are pricey.
I know it hurts and it's pricey, but I actually feel like
they are worth it.
I feel like they're worth it. It hurts to say this, but it actually is worth it. Like, out of all the things you can buy if you want to build a commander collection, I feel like the 10 fetch lands are actually like,
that's the first,
maybe
thing.
The most important thing. Like, they're just so,
much so
impactful. You'll play them in so many decks. They have so many synergies. I know they're expensive, so hopefully we get another reprint soon to drop their prices again. They started creeping up again. It happens every time they reprint them, and they slowly start ticking up. And yeah, the ones they reprinted last, like 3 or 4 years ago, are creeping up again and getting pricey again. But yeah, they are totally worth it if you can afford them, because they're just so impactful.
I gotta mention another one. Surveyor Scope, crack a fetch, and in response, while the band is not on the battlefield yet, crack the Surveyor Scope.
Well, I think we saw you do that on a Clash episode. I'm pretty sure
we saw
that.
Richard mentioned it in his PowerPoint presentation about Surveyor Scope, and that's when I pushed the button to even get the fetch lands for my non-green decks. It's just, oh my god, they're so good.
That's why I love Opposition Agent. And why we need more.
I gotta sign off though before we stop this.
Oh yes,
I gotta
sign off.
Lance related funny story from the pre-release.
Ooh, yeah.
So it was my girlfriend's first pre-release, and we both had our first game, and I came back to her table, and there was a guy who actually knew me and very excitedly told me what he did in game one. Her first game ever at an LGS. And he opened an Armageddon, and she did not know what the card does. And he did explain to her, like, well, now your lands are all gone. And he very excitedly turned to his friends on the behind him, saying, dude, I did it. I blew up all the lands. That's like the first game ever. First
Welcome
LGS
to pre-release.
Experience is getting mass land destructed with actual Armageddon
so
in limit, and then get stomped by a Simic deck.
Oh, will she ever go to pre-release again, Phil? Do you think? Did it ruin
Probably.
The whole experience? Okay.
I wonder if now your girlfriend's gonna wonder that's just an everyday thing that happens in.
Yeah, that's just how magic works. Yeah, yeah. She thinks the magic you and her have been playing is like nice mode, and the real magic is people just Armageddoning each other all the time. Oh, that's great. Anyway, that is our ranking of dual lands. So, let us know what you think. Hopefully, this is useful. Hopefully, if you're building the deck, you can kind of go down the list and get an idea of where these lands fit, which ones are best, which ones you should play and shouldn't play. But if we missed anything, let us know in the comments. If you got a favorite land cycle or a sleeper land cycle that we didn't talk about, let us know about that too. And we'll be back next week to talk some more Commander. So until then, have a great week, everyone. And this is the crew signing out.